the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Like always, Jason's sitting here in the room with me, and Ben has decided to sit down and join us today to talk about what?
Whatever y'all would like to talk about post-harvest.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast, by the way.
Thank you.
It's been a few weeks.
Yeah, it has. Probably since like March or April.
No, it ain't been that long.
Has it not been?
No. That hair is still glorious, though.
It's hot.
I can imagine.
It's aggressive.
It's about to cool down.
It's starting to resemble a motorcycle helmet.
At the end of the day, have you kept score on how many days it takes to a ponytail holder?
No, it's not that long yet. It's somewhere in between having long hair and short hair.
What's wrong with you? I'd be done straightened it out.
It looks borderline creepy if I were to do that.
It kind of looks borderline creepy now.
If you can imagine a textured motorcycle helmet, that's what Ben's hair looks like when it's all poofed out.
So, Jason, you got to talking this morning and said when we're sitting in here today, you wanted to talk basically post-harvest. I'm assuming that meant weed control. Because if you look at the headway we've made in the Delta the last couple of days, a lot of corn is out of here now. And that's kind of the first thing when we get back into your wheelhouse after harvest, right?
Yeah, the corn's coming down, you know, and the calls that I get this time of year are usually something of the effect of, what do I do with the stubble, you know, for weed control? And, you know, there's a whole conversation, you know, in your arena, Bobby, related to nutrient management and those type of things. But when it comes to weed control, to me, one of the big problems with managing corn stubble is there's no one size fits all. And the fact that every farm's different, you know, farms spread across different counties versus farms that are, you know, relatively compact. And so everybody basically has to do it different. I think there's definitely value in that corn stubble laying on top of the ground for suppressing weeds that, you know, the summer annual weeds that reemerge, you know, once the canopy's opened up after harvest, lights hitting the ground. I think there's value in leaving that stubble there. So what I've kind of settled in over the years is telling people, leave the stubble laying on top of the ground as long as is practical for that individual operation. So for me, that may be 2 weeks. For you, if you're spread out and got a lot of other things to do, a lot of other things on the radar, you're cropping mix on your farm's diverse, you're going to have to move from corn to cutting beans or cutting rice and then ultimately picking cotton, then, you know, it may be a couple of hours. You may be running, you know, discs and hippers right behind the combine, and that's okay if that's what's practical for the operation. Now, you may have to come back at some point and do something before frost, but still you've left it, you know, as long as you can.
So, in general, we're sitting here in the first week of September. I guess, well, it's not technically September yet, but when this releases, it will be. If I don't leave my corn straw on the surface, how far can I get before? I mean, when's the first frost? November?
Who knows? You know, generally, I think if you look at the 30-year, and I have no idea about this, but I would suspect if you look at the 30-year weather data from Stoneville, it's probably going to be the first week of November sometime. But it could just as easily be the first week of October, you know, this year.
All right, if I've got 2 months for weeds to sit out there and germinate and grow, what am I controlling them with?
There's options. All of those options cost money. And that's why I say, if you can, leave that stubble laying on top of the ground, let it act as a mulch that's going to suppress those new emerging weeds. So your other two options are tillage and herbicides. And with both of those, it's going to require you to do more than one thing if you leave the stubble laying. But with tillage or with a herbicide, you're going to have to do it more than once. So obviously, if you disc a field up, you're going to disc a lot of that stubble under. You're not going to have that mulch there. And as soon as you catch a rain, you're going to get a new emergence, and you're eventually going to have to take out that flush. Likewise, if you use a, just say, a residual herbicide, well, it's out 90 whatever degrees it is outside right now, and it's kind of raining around. So if you made an application today and did get it incorporated, I wouldn't expect it to last more than, you know, 3 weeks tops, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with all that. And that's what, you know, we've talked about several years is the amount of time between now and when the first frost is. That's a lot of time for a pigweed or any of your summer annuals that are still out there to come up and germinate. And it seems to be this time of year that even a, you know, really small, maybe 4 to 6 inch pigweed, once it starts sensing that the days are getting shorter and it's getting close to winter, they'll shoot a seed head up, and it doesn't take very many of them to produce several thousand seed. You know, a little bitty one will produce 100 or a couple hundred.
Yeah, if you think about soybeans and day length, you know, pigweeds are the same way. There's some photoperiodic response to it, so the shorter the days get, you know, you're going to get a seed head shorter. But again, if you do get a residual herbicide incorporated this afternoon before the, you know, 25th of September, that herbicide treatment's going to be gone, and you're going to be needing to do something else.
So when is it going to be gone?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's going to vary depending on what the conditions are over the next few weeks. But just given the temperature and thinking about, you know, the length of residual you can expect from a treatment in May, you know, from a at planting treatment, you bring that to now. Well, it's hotter now than it is in May, so you could only suspect that the length of residual is going to be shorter now than it is, you know, during the spring around planting time.
I'm just trying to figure out how that fits in with the, you know, Wayne always used to talk about, we're kind of on this cover crop thing now. We used to just let our weeds grow in the fall, and that kind of helped be our cover. Why do we not want to do that anymore?
I think because of the spring, and we've talked about this, you know, regularly over the last few weeks on this podcast. If we can come in the spring and the first thing, the first tire that comes through that field is hooked to a planter, then, you know, we're off to a good start. And if we let a lot of that stuff go in the fall, then it's going to be multiple, it's going to require multiple applications of a burn down. And then the other facet of that, I mean, related, but another layer to it, is the problematic weeds that we have, the winter annual weeds. So specifically ryegrass, and then secondarily, you know, horseweed.
So resistance really kind of changed the game.
Absolutely.
On us, leaving those winter weeds out there.
I mean, we've done as much fall residual, us in Louisiana, to my knowledge, have done as much fall residual treatments as anybody else has, at least in the mid-south states. And all of ours was driven originally by horseweed. And then we took the concept of an Invoke treatment or a Valor treatment or whatever it was for horseweed and applied that to ryegrass and figured out, well, hey, we could put out dual or zidua or boundary in the fall, and we're way down the field into getting a crop in the spring considering ryegrass control. So that's the way that all happened for us. So then you combine that with, on a heavier textured field, you've got a fall residual out there. That bed holds together well because of the soil texture and no vegetation during the winter. And then you get in, you know, you have a better opportunity to get in earlier in the spring. Now that
doesn't track with corn as much as it does soybeans.
Right.
But
yeah, because, I mean, there's usually going to be some tillage required, you know, behind a corn crop. Another thing related to that is the soil texture aspect. And definitely, you know, when we have bare soil throughout the winter on a lighter texture, you know, silt loam, sandy loam, then, you know, we can set ourselves up for having to do some additional field work in the springtime, depending on, you know, how the weather goes throughout the winter months.
Well, with a lot of these very fine sandy loams, we tend to hip them up in the fall and we're going to re-hip them in the spring anyway because we generally get more rain than will hold that bed together. Would you tell a guy in that point just double disc in the fall and wait to hip in the spring? Or, I mean, because chances are on that very fine sandy loam, if you want any semblance of a bed, you're going to have to re-hip it.
I think so. And I think one of the humongous holes in this window that we're referring to is the fact that this window that we're referring to starts about the 1st of August and it doesn't close till
March.
Probably the, yeah, I mean, it's all winter. So there's so many differences from one operation to the next. There's no way you could cookie cutter it.
It looks a lot different if you're 2,000 acre farmer versus a 10,000 acre farmer.
Yeah, and all factors related to that. How much equipment do you have?
Crop mix.
Right. I mean, there's an infinite number of
amount
variables.
Of light textured versus heavy textured soil you have.
Just, yep. I mean, it's just the possibilities are endless, and so then you gotta strike some balance somewhere, and say, you know, I can't account for everything, but, you know, here's an option. Here's a, you know, maybe a better option, maybe not quite as good an option for you, but, you know, lay out two or three options and go from there. For example, one thing that we've tried to do over the past couple of years, and it hasn't necessarily worked because of the winter that we've ended up with being wet, is we've tried to sow some cover crops into some stand-in soybeans.
So, like, what growth stage of soybeans?
So before they start dropping leaves, so
that R6
ballpark
range
of 6.5, you know, in there. Our idea there was twofold. One, or maybe threefold even, but one, we have a mulch there when those leaves drop, and we have some moisture to get the cover crop up, because one problem we've had is getting a stand of cover crop.
Because it's so dry.
It's so dry in September, early October, when we've, you know, tried to plant them in
traditionally
the past.
Tried to plant them, yeah.
All right. If we could get that established, we could suppress some of those summer annual weeds that come up after harvest. So
you talk, what summer annual?
So Palmer amaranth, barnyard grass, our big main weeds that drive most of our decisions for our summer crops. Ideally, if we had a solid stand of cover crop when the crop was harvested and that canopy opens up, you get a lot of sun in there, you could suppress those late emerging summer weeds. Next step would be the ryegrass. If I've got a solid stand of cover crop at the point that the temperature and the moisture gets right for ryegrass to start emerging.
What temperature is that?
Well, the literature says when you have 7 or 8 days below 90 degrees,
right,
start coming up. Usually we get the temperature requirement, but it's too dry.
Right.
So, it usually starts coming up later than what you expect based on temperature,
so
because it's too dry.
Moisture's our limiting factor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but if we had a good stand of cover crop, we could suppress that emerging ryegrass. And then then you've really got something to work with. We just haven't had the combination of, you know, planting time of the summer crop so it's coming off at the right time, and then getting a good stand of the cover crop and a good fall, winter to grow a cover crop. It's just not all the stars haven't lined up for us
so
the couple of years that we've tried to do it.
When you were doing that, did you get any cover crop emergence dropping it in the canopy like that?
We didn't, but we also had zero moisture from the time we did it until
October. This is just me thinking outside the box. You know, generally we're going to put on our last irrigation around six, a little bit before 6.5. What if you flew on your seed and then irrigated it up?
You might have a really, really good stand, a cover crop on the low end of the field.
Think it'd flush it all down?
Well, you know, you got that, you know, ground's pretty sealed already.
From all those irrigations?
Yep.
Just throwing that out there.
And Ben, you know, Ben was involved with all that stuff when we were doing it, and he's looked at a lot of those treatments the last few years during the winter time. So he may be able to add something to that I hadn't. I think it's a good idea, and we just hadn't been able to put it all together yet in plot work.
Yeah, I mean, it's the idea behind it is really good, and it's gives you something to look forward to looking at in the wintertime. But, you know, our last 2 years, I would say, were abnormally wet in the winter. You know, it has been.
Describe winter. Like, when do you consider winter starts? Because I know everybody, like, to me, winter is deer season, but that's technically still fall, right?
Technically. I mean, I guess I kind of describe winter the same way from November, December, January, February. But we've had more or less mild winters the past couple of years, so the ryegrass has really blown up. It's been, you know, we talked at several meetings about when not to apply Select, when it, you know, when ryegrass is tillering, but it's coming out of the ground tillering. We've had abnormally large amounts of rainfall, so it's made some of our cover crop research and what we've looked at in the winter challenging. I know what the field we do the cover crop research in last year for weed control stayed underwater several times. But one of the big take homes that I remember from looking at a lot of those plots is we never got as good control with a cover crop by itself without a residual herbicide. We're going to try to repeat some of those studies and look at the what Jason mentioned about putting cover crops into a standing crop and try to get that more well defined this year, because that could offer a lot of benefits if you're in a production system where you're scattered over several acres and you're moving around. If you call an airplane to fly on some cover crop and hold down your weed control until you could come back and put out your fall residual, if that's in your budget for October, November.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing it does do, it locks you into straight no-till. You know, if you're gonna leave that cover crop out there, so it needs to be in a, you know,
well, not necessarily. If you're going to use it as a green manure, you could hip your rows. Like if you were in a sandy soil, like coming on some of the creek ground, right, you can fly it on now and then hip it in as a green manure in the spring.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking more about it would lock you out of fall tillage. Maybe
that's a better way to describe it.
You'd be out of, you know, post-harvest field prep, which, I mean, even you got to admit, even on our lighter ground, if it's not a cotton field, there's going to be some fall bed prep to it. I mean, most always we're going to do something in the fall. Even if we just leave it, you know, halfway done for the spring. So, Bobby, what does post-harvest look like for nutrient management? We've been talking about weed control and stubble and things like that. So, you know, what are the things we need to think about related to nutrient management and maybe just field management in general?
You know, as we've always said, if you take your soil samples right after you get the corn out, they're probably going to be a little low because it's hot and dry and lack of soil moisture, and what you had in the stubble is not leached out back into the soil. So just keep that in mind, that the closer you pull to the combine, you could have lesser amount of nutrients than if you pulled that sample in October, November with a little rainfall and stuff like that. I think the biggest thing, and you've heard me talk about this continually the last 3 years, is if we do elect throw a match on it and we want to burn that stubble, which we burn a lot of rice, we don't burn as much corn today as we have in the past, but we do tend to burn corn, is that if you burn that corn stubble, you're going to lose 72% of your sulfur into the atmosphere. And with where we're at today, sulfur is one of the major nutrients that we have lacking, and one of the things holding us back from high yields.
Yeah, I've heard you say that sulfur is one of the big things that you've been taking questions on and making recommendations on the last couple of years.
Yeah, it seems, you know, once we started getting our yields up there and in these grain-based rotations with the impact of Clean Air Act and all of that, 30 years removed from it, well, longer than 30 years now, almost 45 years. But as we get no free sulfur anymore, we got to buy it to put it back. And
yeah,
we just haven't done that at the rate that we've taken it out.
And not to give people the wrong impression, but it's related more to what you just described rather than the amount of fields we burn. Because the majority of our fields are not burned. I mean, we burn some fields, but there's a lot more fields that get tillage in the fall compared with burned in the fall.
That's right. It's more I guess the primary reason we're trending low in sulfur is our removal has outpaced our applications. And the reason that is the case is for so long, we had a reserve of sulfur built up in the soil from atmospheric deposition and environmental pollution that we just don't get today because we've cleaned up with Tier 4 diesel motors and scrubbers on smokestacks, and all the sulfur pollution we used to get that was free fertilizer is no longer there for us.
And I know we can do an entire episode on fertilization in the fall, but yeah, we're not there yet, right? I mean, there's no reason to be thinking about fertilization other than pulling some soil samples, maybe.
The only thing I would say about that, if you got your soil samples out and you got everything ready, what we've run into the last couple years is a roadblock, which was that abnormally wet weather that Ben's been talking about. So a lot of our fertilizer applications haven't been made because the logistics didn't bear it out due to wet ground. So I would say if you've got your corn out now, you might want to consider go ahead and doing something there where you'll have time to do it on your other crops. Because if we set into another wet weather pattern, you're not going to get everything this year just like you had in the last couple. If you wait till everything's out before you start, you're going to run out of time.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, we've been rambling a little bit today. Hope some of that was useful. Bobby's got to sign out and go to a soccer game. Ben, I don't know, maybe Ben's going to get a haircut today. Maybe he's not. I bet he doesn't.
It ain't going to happen.
I don't think I can at this point.
He's like Samson.
I'm just jealous. Yeah. I mean, I've said it in the past. I'm just jealous.
Rightfully so. All right, folks. Well, we're going to jump off. Hope harvest progresses well from here on out. And if we can do anything for y'all, just give us a call.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.